This is a recording of the Sunday Spiritual Meeting with the speaker Manuel C. from Stockton, recorded at the California Mid-State Regional Convention of NA No. 2 in Modesto, California, on Sunday, June 28, 1992, in observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level. Please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all NA speakers.
Please. The speaker for this morning, Manuel C. from Stockton.
Thank you, Emmanuel Manatic. I want to thank the committee for allowing me to share my gift with you, especially the newcomers, those of you that are new. In your first 30 days of recovery, you know, last night was when it was really very spiritual to me. I remember the first convention that I ever went to, I just couldn't believe the amount of people that were there and what was going on. You know, just a God-given gift. And that's what I want to share with you this morning. I want to tell you a little bit about what I'm all about, really, and what I had to deal with. I heard a lot of similarities all weekend. I tried to listen to as many speakers as I could just to, it really affirmed, that we do have a lot of similarities and we're going to go down a lot of the same path. We do try to share our gift with you so you don't have to go down the same path that we went through, but it seems like, that's the way it is. A lot of the speakers that I heard, we did have a lot of similarities, not only in our using, also in our recovery. And I need to share that with you also. Just going back and thinking about where it started for me in my disease kicking in was probably at a very young age, like 3-4 years old. And, this is before I even put any kind of chemicals in my system. It was a very critical period in my life. My father was taken away in a straitjacket. And right there, I was already developing some very... it's just those feelings that we don't like to talk about. We don't want to open ourselves up to everybody and let you know, how fearful we really are. Anyway, at that point, I put up a lot of walls. I had a lot of resentments, I had a lot of anger, a lot of fear. How dare they take my father away? Because that man suffered from heart disease. And I don't know at what point, where he was when he died. But what I do want to share with you is that during those years of trying to grow up and deal with these feelings and like I say, not really wanting to share with anybody the pain that I was living with, being raised by women, it's very difficult. And I do talk about that in meetings today, that I was raised by women, and I do have more in common with women than I do with men. I need to talk about that. I'm one of these people, I know how to cook, I know how to iron, I know how to sew, I know how to do a lot of these things that, a lot of us males don't know how to do. I heard somebody talking about, fixing cars and building homes and all that, that's something that, I didn't learn. But what I did learn was, by my mother and by the women that were in my life, they did show me a lot of love, how to care. They introduced God to me. And, they did the best they could. But, I didn't want any part of it. You know, like, what do they know? You know, they're only women. I was the youngest of four boys, and I seen a lot of the things that they were doing, and that's exactly what I wanted to do. And I made sure that I ended up just the way that they did, and I did. It was all about, you know, wanting to be with the fellas, and at a very young age, I proceeded to follow that path, you know, no matter what. You know, no matter how much pain it brought me, physical pain, mental pain, it really didn't matter. And the point where I really crossed that line is at the age of 9 or 10 years old. You know, and it's very important for me to remember that too, because I have an 11-year-old right now, and I do keep a close eye on him just to see where he's at emotionally. And at that point there is when I crossed the line. It was like, you know, I'm going to try this and see what happens. You know, it was like I tried to abide by you know, the principles that I was taught, you know, by my mother and by my aunt, you know, try to be good. And for once, I went ahead and I jumped in with both feet and see if I can get away with it, and I got away with it. And right there, you know, that, you know, being an addict, you know, that was the start right there. I knew that I can get away with things, and I ran with it. And at a very young age, I did a lot of things that brought a lot of guilt, a lot of shame. And I could not bear the pain. And in order for me to deal with that, I proceeded to kill the pain. And I started using it at a very young age, and it took the pain away. I know today that I do have an allergy to any kind of chemical. It doesn't matter what it is that I put in my system. You know, right from day one, they got me sick. You know, it doesn't matter what it was. They got me sick, and I know it today. And it didn't matter. All I knew is that no matter how physically I got sick, it took that mental pain away. You know, it took me out of where I was. I didn't ever want to be there, but I got myself there, and that was the only freedom that I could find, is by putting chemicals in my system. You know, this went on for quite a long time. You know, at a very young age, starting and trying to get to junior high school. I could remember the days of going out there with the fellows, and I got to that point where I needed to be with people where I felt safe. And I picked out the people that I really felt would take care of me. And at the same time, not wanting to let them know how afraid I was, you know, that I didn't want to do what I was doing, but the only thing that I knew was what the environment that they were in. So I proceeded to, you know, to be that rebellious person, you know, and the way I dressed to let you know that, you know, that I was different. I could remember in junior high school already, you know, being searched. You know, I had weapons taken away from me. I had drugs taken away from me. You know, I had, you know, people already knew what kind of person I was. But it just so happened that, you know, I got to that point of barely making it. I was already getting out of junior high school. And at that point already, a lot of the friends that I was running with were already going to jail. Or they were given the option to go into service. And some of them died. But I was very fortunate that I did get into high school. And then again, you know, I no longer had those friends. You know, I was a loner through high school. I hear a lot of people that are asking me if I'm going to my high school reunion. I really don't know. You know, I really don't have any desire to go to a high school reunion, because I really wasn't close to any of the people there in school, you know. And it's really weird, you know, because I missed a lot. I really missed a lot. And I was just discussing that with somebody at work the other day. And I really don't have the desire to go, but I might do it just to see who's there, you know, and experience something different. But I could say, you know, that my addiction was progressing to the point where I isolated a lot. You know, through high school, I did have some friends, you know, those four of us that, you know, that hung together. And, you know, we were sick. But I guess I was the sickest of the four. You know, like, they were able to stop. You know, they were able to get married, to get jobs, and to do some responsible things. But I just didn't have the ability to do it. But one of my brothers, he was one of these type of people that he had some type of direction in his life. You know, he was using, he was doing, you know, the things that I was doing. But he still, for some reason, had the capabilities of doing something positive with, you know, with his life. And he kind of like guided me through and had made sure that I was taken care of. And he was one of these guys that one of my great enablers. You know, he was the one that got me out of jail. He's the one that cleaned me up. He's the one that wanted to make sure that I was there for him also. And it got to the point where I was getting out of high school, and I didn't know what I was going to do. All I knew is that at that point already, I was 18 years old, and I was thinking about how I was going to use. I knew I was tired of using the way I was using. And I thought about, well, maybe I'll just do it on weekends, or maybe I'll just do it on holidays or birthdays. And, you know, being an addict, you know, every day was a holiday. You know, every day was a birthday. And, you know, I just could not stop. You know, I just could not do a lot of control already. Anyway, it just so happened that me and this friend of mine, we got this bright idea, well, we'll go into service. So I went down and I talked to a recruiter, and I had planned on going in, but I didn't go in. It was like I got a job, and I went down and talked to the recruiter, you know, I'm sorry, but I got me a job already, so I'm not going in. And he wasn't very happy about that. But at that point there, at, you know, at 18 years old is when, you know, when my disease really kicked in. You know, I was already to that point where, you know, the money was coming in, I was working steady, and it was just like a big party. And that brought a lot of that pain back again. You know, I did more things that I was ashamed of, more things that built the resentments. And I found myself in places that I didn't want to be, and I started going to jail. And like I say, my brother was already there to bail me out. He cleaned me up, and we just continued. After I got out of jail, I just kept doing the same thing over and over. Anyway, it got to the point where he was so dependent on me that like I was the only person that that he went anywhere with. You know, like we always use an excuse, well, you know, and I go play pool. You know, it wasn't nothing about going to play pool or going to a dance or a reception. It wasn't about going to a dance or a reception. It was all about going out and getting loaded, and that was the bottom line. You know, but the only difference was I took him home and I went to jail. And time and time again, I was on that phone calling him up. And there he would be. And it just so happened that in April 1976 God finally saw it, that he needed to show me some type of a direction. And I got to know a little bit about recovery at that time. This friend of mine had gone into a treatment center, and he's my best friend, you know. Even today, I still consider him my best friend. I just cannot be with him because he's still out there using. And what happened was that I went to this treatment center and I visited him. And, you know, I was all for it. I was all for giving him the support because he needed it. You know, I never looked at myself. I was always looking at the other person. You know, I was tired. Like I would say, I was tired of cleaning him up. You know, I was tired of taking him home. I was tired of protecting him. All these things that I was always looking, you know, like I was better than him. I never was. It just so happened that he met a lot of beautiful people that were in recovery. You know, and a lot of those people are still here today, and that's what's beautiful about it. I got invited to their homes. You know, we went fishing together. We went to ball games together. And what's sick about it was that, you know, this mind of mine, you know, being the addict that I am, it was like I knew these people were just like me. You know, there was no doubt because they admitted it. You know, they were just like me. So I took it that, okay, fine, you know, you're just like me, then why don't you share your stuff with me then, you know? Like, I go to your home, you know, you don't bring anything out. I go to ball games with you, you don't bring anything out. It's like, you know, they're waiting until after I left because they knew the kind of addict that I was. And, you know, I was very offended by this. So what I would do to get even, I'd leave them and then I'd go proceed to, you know, the way I always did. And got loaded and went to jail. But the thing is, a year later, I'm in this treatment center that this friend of mine went through. You know, I went to jail April 3rd of 1977 for the last time. I haven't been back since. But I got there, and I was scared. I couldn't let the counselors know what was going on with me. You know, I had this big old knot in my stomach, a lump in my throat every time they called on me. I couldn't say anything. It was tough. But it just so happened, see, God softened this path a little bit for me because I knew the people that were there. I had already been introduced to the counselors. Like I say, you know, I went to their homes, so I was familiar with them. But I was still not able to let them know where I was coming from. All I knew that I was desperate enough where I wanted somebody else to, you know, to help me because I knew I couldn't do it on my own. You know, I tried so many times. At least I thought of it. I thought of it a lot of times. I just wasn't able to do it. So I gave myself up to them at that point, you know. At that point, I could say that, you know, they were my higher power. They were the only hope that I had. So I spent 3 weeks in there, you know, just being there, occupying space. You know, I can say that today because that's exactly what I was doing. I was occupying space for 3 weeks, and they allowed me to leave there. I was supposed to go on a 2-day leave to go take care of business or visit family and so forth. But I remember catching the bus and getting off in Stockton. And as soon as I got off the bus, you know, that disease kicked in again. It was like, okay, let's go get loaded. Nobody's going to know. Yeah. And I really didn't intend to go back. But what happened was that, you know, God was with me again. I got back on the bus. I went back to the treatment center. In 3 hours I was back there. And I told the counselors, you know, that I had no business out in the streets. You know, I needed to be there. And at that point, I was able to start opening up. There was one of the counselors there that, you know, that took me under his wing. And you know, at first it was like, you know, this son of a bitch, you know, I don't know what he's testing me, you know. He just wants to see how far he can go. And, but I know today exactly what he was trying to do. He was trying to show me where I was going to end up at if I continued using the way I was using. Because he would take me to the hospital and ask me to talk to the people that were coming in into the emergency room. And I told him, you know, I really don't have anything to tell him. And he says, yes, you do. You know, tell them about what you're doing right now. If you're in treatment and you're trying to help yourself and there are people that are there that will help them. You know, so I did this. And again, you know, he took it a step further. Like, he took me up to one of the wards where these people are strapped down in these cranks. Some of them are spitting their livers out. And he told me, go in there and talk to them. And I thought, man, this guy's got to be out of his mind. So I went ahead and I did it anyway. You know, I tried to follow some kind of direction. And I went in there and I did the best that I could. And I talked to these people. And it just so happened that after I got out of treatment, I ended up taking one of those guys home with me. And not that he stayed clean or anything, but, you know, I was able to do, you know, what was expected of me. That what happened is I left there, and, you know, it was like, you know, I cannot go do what I used to do. You know, I was telling this to myself, you know, I can't no longer hang out in the pool halls, you know, in the bars, connection shop, at the handball courts. You know, I can't do this anymore. So every day I went to this treatment center before I went to work. You know, I was there every day. People thought I worked there. And then if I wasn't there, I was at a recovery house, or I was at one of these drop-in centers or clubhouses, whatever you want to call them. And that's where I spent my time, with people that are in recovery. I did not want to be by myself. But I know exactly where I was at, you know, prior to going into that treatment center. So what I did was, you know, every time I heard this, keep coming back, you know, at first it sounded corny to me, you know, like, you know, what do people mean, keep coming back? And that's exactly what it means, you just keep coming back. And this is exactly what I did for the first 7 months of my recovery. That's all I did. And I kept coming back. And I would go into the meetings and I'd sit down. And, you know, I wouldn't put my name on the register. I'd hide in the back of the room. And I can remember this one counselor that she told me, you know, for an hour and a half, man, you know, just sit there and listen. You know, don't get up to go to the bathroom. Don't get up to go get coffee. You know, just be still. Just sit there and listen. You know, if I practice this, and I sat there for 7 months, and I was still hurting, and then just so happened that, again, you know, God made it possible for me to find somebody that I could relate to. I was in his hall similar to this, and they were given awards, not awards, but they were for people being clean, you know, for a year, 6 months, and completing their aftercare. And it just so happened, I looked across the room and I seen this guy that I knew from out in the streets, and I thought, man, this guy looks different. You know, he's clean, and he's got a haircut, and, you know, he looks pretty good. So I went over and I talked to him, and, you know, he asked me, you know, what are you doing here? I said, the only thing that I could say was, well, they tell me to keep coming back, you know, so I'm here. So, you know, we started talking, and, you know, he told me some of the things that he did, and I thought, no, not this guy. He's pulling my leg, you know. You know, here I thought again, you know, there's another guy, you know, just testing me, see how far he could take me. He would tell me that he did this, you know, and he did that. And I was going to prove him a liar. So all these places that he told me he went to, I showed up just to see if he was there, and I'd be damned if he wasn't there. And then he started inviting me to, you know, to go with him to do H&I meetings and sharing meetings. And there was a gentleman that introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous. He saw something in me that... I didn't understand it at the time, you know, like he said, hey, man, you know, we have a Narcotics Anonymous meeting on Wednesday nights, you know, why don't you come on by? And I'm thinking, Narcotics Anonymous is bullshit. You know, I'm no heroin addict, I don't need to be there. But he saw something in me. And again, you know, I showed up, and I sat there, and I listened. And, you know, it's like I found a home. And at that, you know, like I say, at that time we only had one meeting a week. And, you know, I kept coming to this meeting, and I became a part of it. And, I remember how good I started feeling. You know, we started, you know, like we're this big thing out here, you know, we've got a convention and it's beautiful. And at that time I could remember, you know, a big deal for us was planning a picnic. You know, like it was just a handful of us. And that was our celebration. And I can remember the first one that we had. And it was amazing to me, you know, to see 20 people, you know, 30 people together and having a good time, you know, playing baseball and sharing and, you know, having a meeting afterwards. You know, it was a big deal to me. And, you know, we continued doing these kind of things. And again, you know, these people invited me to their homes. And it just so happened that I met the lady that I'm married to today during this time also. And it was, again, you know, it was like I was trying to understand what these people were trying to tell me, you know, about helping the addict that's still suffering. And yet, you know, they would tell me, don't bring her around because she's still using. You know, and I couldn't understand it. You know, like, hey, you know, I love this lady. But I could not tell anybody that this is the way I felt. You know, that I loved her no matter what. I was going to stick by her. Anyway, it just so happened that, you know, she got into recovery and it was beautiful. You know, we did a lot of things together. We got into service, you know, the both of us. And, you know, I heard a lot about service and the speakers that, you know, that spoke here in the convention. And, you know, those of you that are not in service, you know, this is what it's all about. You know, giving away what was given to us freely, you know. And it was given to me way before I even got into recovery. I didn't even know it. You know, just people giving of their time. And, you know, now I know the importance of it because that's what keeps me clean today. And, you know, we got involved, you know, we started doing things and becoming secretaries. And, well, at one point I was secretary in 4 meetings. You know, being an addict that I am, I got involved. But, you know, the thing about it was that things started really happening real fast, you know. I started feeling real good about myself. My self-esteem was, I mean, it was, God, I just couldn't believe it. I no longer had that knot in my stomach, that lump in my throat, you know. I became long-winded in meetings, you know. People got tired of listening to me in meetings. And, God, you know, I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought, God, you know, what happened to me? You know, I'm not that person anymore, you know. Like, I do have something to offer. And, anyway, we, you know, we decided, well, you know, maybe we should start a family. So, you know, we figured, well, we're going to do that. You know, we better get married. And so, you know, we did this. We got married and we started a family. And, started getting promotions on my job. So, you know, with this addict thinking of mine, it was like, okay, you know, all these beautiful things are happening now. So, you know, I need to start getting responsible. You know, I gotta be a good provider, a good husband, you know, a good father. You know, all these things that I was told that I would never be, I was becoming. So, you know, I took that to the limit also. And the thing that's very important that I let you know that my recovery got put on the back burner. You know, there's another thing that I heard from the other speakers that these things do happen to us if we're not careful. I remember hearing this word complacency. I was sitting in a meeting and that was a topic. It was like at that time, God was trying to give me a message, but I wasn't listening. You know, the complacency started setting in, and I was like, yeah, I got it together. You know, I know what to do. You know, I know all about the steps. I know all about prayer. I know all about carrying the message. I know all about service work. You know, I know how to do all these things. So if it ever gets to the point where, you know, where I need to get back to doing these things, well, I know what to do. And here I was. 4 years clean, I guess it was, 4 or 5 years. I'm not even sure, to be honest with you. And the only thing that I had going for me at that time was that I was involved in a bowling league, you know, for recovery addicts. And I figured, well, you know, at least I'm around people in recovery. But I got to the point where I was no longer with them. And I lost contact with all you people. And it just so happened that my wife went back out after 6 years of being clean. And, you know, it was like, I wasn't worried about it. You know, I was like, shit, you know. I got 7 years clean, you know. I can help her out. You know, I did it before, I can do it again. You know, but the thing is, I didn't do anything. It was the fellowship that did it. It wasn't me. It was God that did it. It wasn't me. It was this mind of mine. I figured, well, you know, I'll take care of her. I'll clean her up. And this went on for 5 years. And all these things that we hear about, you know, all these material things, all these egotistical behaviors, all these things that, you know, that I heard in meetings, like, I became, you know, that's what I became. I was very egotistical. I was self-centered. You know, nobody could tell me anything. You know, like, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong. You know, I'm being responsible. You know, I'm taking care of my wife. I'm taking care of my son. I'm doing all these things. Yes, but you're not taking care of yourself. You need to get back into recovery. And I was like, don't worry about it. I know what to do. That's, you know, that's the attitude that I had. It just so happened that 6 years ago this month, as a matter of fact, it was to the point where she had enough. And she proceeded to walk out of my life. I don't know, you know, she did it several times, but, you know, like this was the ultimate, you know, like she was walking down the street. And, you know, I did the manly best thing that I could do, was to go out there and physically abuse her and carried her back into the house. You know, laid her on the couch, and it was like God was there again. And it was like I looked at her, and just for one split second I remembered how good it felt, you know, to be with you people. And that's when I told her, I said, you know, I don't know what you're going to do, but I got to go back to meetings. You know, I need to get back in there and try to straighten my life out. And that's exactly what I did. You know, like I said, it's been 6 years now. And it's been six beautiful years. It was like she continued using, she continued hurting. And there was nothing that I could do for her. You know, all I could do is be there for her when she needed me. I can remember the days that I would go home and the best that I could do was just to check and see if she was still breathing. And I continued to go into meetings. You know, I was involved in service, and I've been involved in service since I got back into meetings. And that was a very beautiful feeling to know that people welcomed me back. It was like I was 9 years clean and a newcomer. You know, and I heard somebody share this past weekend, you know, there I was, 9 years clean, and I was a newcomer. And I needed to tell these people how bad I was hurting and how bad I needed you people. And the people didn't judge me. They allowed me to come into these rooms. They allowed me to sit there. And again, they allowed me into their homes. And what was amazing to me was like, you know, I was gone 5 years. And here I come back in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, they're having conventions, they're having unity days, they got a basic text. You know, they got all this literature, and, you know, they got this ASC, and all, you know, all these things are going on. And I'm thinking, whoa, you know, what happened? God, you know, I thought Narcotics Anonymous couldn't make it without me, and I come back, and man, you know, it really amazed me. And it just so happened that I hooked up with this one guy, and it's like, you know, he showed me what this recovery thing was all about again. And I stuck by him. You know, I did a lot of things. You know, I owe my life to him. And then for me, it was necessary to start getting serious about my program. You know, I started thanking God every day for allowing me to, for another day in recovery. It was like I needed to stay involved. I needed to continue to tell you how bad I was hurting until I didn't hurt anymore. And that's what was beautiful about it. I knew that one day, I was going to be able to come to a meeting and tell you how good I felt instead of telling you how bad I felt. Because I knew that hope was there. I knew that you people were going to walk with me. You're going to allow me to go in there and babble on day after day after day after day. But the thing about it was, I was still hoping that, maybe one day, my wife would get back into recovery. But, like I was told, hey, let God do God's work. Get out of the way. And it was real hard for me to do that. But it just so happened, that she got back into recovery. That's beautiful. It's like that dream, we always have that dream of one of these days everything's going to be all right. That dream has come true. And she's with me this weekend. My little boy is with me this weekend. It's beautiful. It's like something that God, God planned for me. And I didn't know, it was like I always wanted to know what the outcome was going to be. And, and today I don't do that. It's like I know there's a path that I have to follow, but I don't worry about the outcome because I know at the end it's going to be all right. Like when we go through bad times, we're human. We get on that roller coaster, we go up and down. It's just a continuing journey. That's the, living life on life's terms. And through the spiritual principles of Narcotics Anonymous, man, it's possible. It is possible. See, today it's not all about, afraid that I'm going to go back out there and use it again. I know that God took that obsession away from me. It's not that it won't come back. I know that. Because the only out that I had 6 years ago was, get rid of my wife, get rid of my son, and the problem would be all over. This wasn't divorcing her. At that point I was homicidal and I was suicidal. See, it wasn't all about using. I know today that I don't want to use no matter what. I know that I don't. See, and you people that are new in here, you people are the ones that helped me with this. Because you're the reminder. I see it in your eyes. You want it so bad. But all I can do is tell you, what I was told when I first came around. Give yourself a break. Don't leave before the miracle happens. Because it will happen in God's time. It's a miracle that you're here right now. This is something that I cannot turn my back on. I did it one time and I was just lucky enough to get back in here. I don't ever want to turn my back on Narcotics Anonymous. I don't want to turn my back on God. See, me and God, we walk side by side. He's always with me. I'm thanking Him constantly. For everything. It was an experience last week. We went up to Yosemite. Here I'm 43 years old. I've never been to Yosemite. I'm one of these people that, I just don't get around, even in my youth, and I didn't pull in these geographicals. I'm just not that type of person. Anyway, we went up to Yosemite and it was a beautiful experience, And I shared this in the meeting that, if it would have been, 6 years ago or at the time that I was using, it would have been a real bad experience for me. You know, like I would have, out of all the negative things, and like we had hail, we had rain, we had snow, we had all these things, and I would have used it as an excuse to say, well, it was, you know, it was a bad experience because the, you know, the weather was bad and this and that. And the thing about it is, it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. You know, outside of all the positive things, I was there with people that loved me. I was there with my family. You know, God got us to do this, got us home safely. Yeah, and I didn't have to think about any of the negative things. And that's what I try to do today. It's not that I do it 100%. You know, but I try to do the best that I can to be positive about what goes on in my life today, even when times are hard. And I can remember in the beginning, this guy, that's the way he used to greet me all the time. It was like he saw me for some reason, like I had it tattooed on my forehead. And he would always tell me, man, you know, you got to think positive. And I hated that guy for that. You know, but I know what he means today. I know that I need to be positive. I need to look at the good things in life today. You know, I need to look at what God has given me. You know, and it's, you know, what I do with it is what matters. You know, and I go on striving, you know, one day at a time. It's, you know, for you newcomers, that in the beginning for me, it was real important that I listened to the speakers. But the thing about it is that, you know, it was selective hearing. You know, I only heard what I wanted to hear. So I guess that's probably another one of the things that I want to share with you. And it was, try to be open-minded, you know. And when you get to those points in your recovery where things start getting rough and you want to cut back on your meetings and you don't want to tell people that you hurt or you don't want to pray, you know, just remember what these speakers talked about, the pain that they had to go through, and allow people to walk you through it. See, that's what I do today. The days that I don't want to go to meetings, like I say, hey, you know, I don't want to end up the way I was 6 years ago. You know, I want to continue doing what I'm doing today. I want to be around all you beautiful people. I want to feel good the way I feel today. You know, because I feel great. Even in my bad days, I feel, you know, I just feel good. And I continually thank God, you know, for putting you people in my life. You know, there's a lot of people out there that I have not met. And somewhere down the line, I'm going to meet a lot more addicts that are going to be, they're going to be there for me when I need them. That's what was beautiful about this convention is I got to see a lot of the people that I hadn't seen, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years now. You know, it's really beautiful that, you know, they still hug me, they remember me, and, you know, they wish the best for me. And, you know, and I wish the best for you. Just like, you know, this is the best show on earth, and that's all there is to it. A lot of the things that I used to hear in the beginning, it was like, man, these people, there's something got to be wrong with them, man, you know. I couldn't understand it, you know, when they would tell me that there's no other place that I would rather be than here with you. I'm thinking, come on, man, be real. You know, but I say those things now. I say those things, and I mean them. You know, because there's other things that I could be doing right now, but let me tell you, there's no other place that I would rather be than right here with you. You know, you people have, you know, have loved me back to health. And, you know, that right there in itself is a miracle. You know, it's real important that, you know, that I keep that in mind. You know, I take care of myself physically, mentally, spiritually. And I try to do this on a daily basis. I might, you know, I do the best that I can on a daily basis. And being the addict that I am, I strive for perfection, and I know that I'm never going to get there. I never will. I remember this guy at work, he always used to tell me, he said, you might not be the best, man, but you're pretty damn good at what you do. And I thought, yeah, okay. You know, but in the back of my mind, I always thought, well, I'm going to be the best. But the thing about it, it's not necessary. It's not necessary for me to be the best at anything. You know, it's because of God, it's because of the spiritual program.
You know, Narcotics Anonymous has brought me a long way. I got into the book, I started reading, and I started really identifying with, you know, with especially the stories in the back, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter whose experience it is, you know, I was able to relate to that, and it really helped me out a lot. Another thing that was very helpful to me was, you know, the people that got here before me and went through similar experiences, you know, and that's what God tells me. And God tells me the only thing that I have to offer to you people is my experience, you know, good or bad, and to let you know that I didn't have to muse over it. You know, because when I was out there in my active addiction, it didn't matter if it was good or bad. I used anyway. That's just the bottom line. You know, I'm an addict, and I used because I wanted to use. But it just so happened that now, you know, I had to turn that around, you know, and only because of God and you people here, I've been able to do that. And, you know, I just want to thank you people for, you know, for supporting me this morning. You know, it really feels good. You know, this isn't a captive audience that you go to a treatment center and, you know, it really feels good because people can't go anywhere. But the thing is, you're here because you want to be here. You know, and hopefully I can share something with you that's going to help you in your recovery. Like I say, you know, I've gone through a lot. And it's only because of my choosing. And, you know, today I choose not to go through that pain any longer. It's like, you know, I want to continue living life on life's terms. Even if it hurts a little bit, so what? So what if it hurts a little bit? It's not going to hurt as bad as it used to. You know, I don't need to go back to jail anymore. You know, I don't need to be thinking about getting rid of my family anymore. You know, I don't need to think about, you know, just ending it because the pain is so bad. And I know that I don't want to use. I don't want to go back out there. But I don't know if I'll make it back. That's what scares me more than anything else. It's not the going back out there and using. It's that I might not make it back. Because since I've been in recovery, I've seen a lot of people come in and out, in and out, in and out. But they're at the bottom, they go out, they don't come back. And the unlucky ones are the ones that don't die, the ones that stay out there suffering. You know, I might be one of the unlucky ones, but I won't die when I go back out there. That death isn't, you know, that doesn't bother me. If I go out there, I might get lucky and die, but I doubt it. You know, I might not be lucky enough to die. You know, I'll probably stay out there and I'll suffer. You know, I don't want that. You know, I might lose the ability to get that desire to come back in these rooms to be with you people. I might not get that third chance. See, I've already had two chances. I might not get the third one. I don't want to lose contact with God. You know, I might not be able to find God again. You know, I don't want to lose you people. You know, there was one thing that I could remember, and it was so devastating. You know, I remember it so vividly today that, you know, we come into recovery, we get all these phone numbers, we stay in contact with people, and geez, you know, we get on the phone, and, you know, there's always somebody there on the other end of the line. You know, but like I say, when things got so bad and I stayed away from you people, I didn't have one phone number to call. Not one. And that was very devastating to me. I was like, what happened? You know, I knew what to do, but, you know, there was nobody there. You know, it was like, I pulled out the phone book and I figured, well, shit, you know, I looked at the yellow pages or something, you know. And it was like, every number that I called, they referred me to somebody else. You know, it was like nobody knew what to do. You know, but you people, you do know what to do. You know, and you're there for me all the time. You know, just to be able to get on the phone and call you if I need you. And, you know, that's the way it's been. It's like, I don't want to ever lose contact with these people anymore. I don't want to be by myself. I don't want to wake up one day and say, well, you know, what happened? You know, I know what happens. So I want to continue to come back to meetings, continue praying, continue following these spiritual guidelines. And that's exactly what they are, the spiritual guidelines, like it or not. You know, I hear some people talking about the spiritual part of the program. Here it is, program, the spiritual. If you're doing what Narcotics Anonymous suggests that you do, then you are doing something spiritual. If you're doing what Narcotics Anonymous suggests, you won't get loaded. Because you won't be doing the things that you used to do. See, and I believe that. I believe as long as I'm doing what I'm doing today, I will not get loaded. I'm not going to set myself up. I'm not going to be around with the people. I'm not going to be in the places that I shouldn't be. But then I also have to remember that there's a lot of other areas in my life that I need to work on. And you people are the ones that are going to get me through this. I've been very fortunate to have a group of people in my life now that continue to help me. And it's beautiful. It's like, you know, God gave me another gift. It wasn't only you people here in the groups. It wasn't only Narcotics Anonymous. And it was other loving people that allowed me into their homes again. You know, that feels good. And I'm no longer looking through the window. I can remember those days of desperation, always wondering, you know, how come I can't be there? You know, but it's not that way anymore. I am there. You know, I am part of today. You know, and that's a good feeling. You know, I don't feel less than. You know, I don't believe like I'm above anybody else either. You know, it's like you people made that possible for me. And with that, I want to thank the committee again for allowing me to come and share with you people. You know, and share my gifts with you, because those are the gifts that God gave me. You know, the tools, the desire, the ability, and to do it one day at a time. Thank you.